A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and I have to say, it's the kind of question that sits with you after you read it. He's looking at parental leave policies around the world, and instead of doing the usual thing, where you compare Sweden's 480 days to America's zero, he's asking something deeper. The very existence of parental leave, the fact that we need a formal, state-sanctioned break from work just to be with a newborn, what does that tell us about how we've organized life? And then the bigger question, how does any of this square with how humans actually raise children for the vast majority of our history? Because for most of human existence, there was no leave to take, lived with the baby.
And that's the tension that makes this worth digging into. You look at the numbers, and they're almost absurd in their range. Estonia gives mothers 100 weeks, fathers get 30. Japan offers 52 weeks for each parent, but only about 7% of fathers take more than 2 weeks. Sweden's got 480 days of paid leave per child, with 90 days reserved for each parent, so it can't all go to one. And then the United States is the only OECD country with zero federal paid parental leave.
That's a wild spread. But even the most generous version of this, even the 480 days in Sweden, still operates on the assumption that work and care are separate things. You're being given permission to step away from your real life for a while. Here's your temporary exemption from the factory floor.
And that's what I think Daniel's really poking at. Parental leave isn't some ancient tradition we've refined over millennia. It's a grudging concession. The system is saying, we acknowledge this is unnatural, so here's a few weeks or months off, and then we expect you back.
A token break from the abnormality.
That's the phrase he used, yeah. And it's hard to argue with. The deeper you look, the more parental leave starts to feel like a symptom, not a solution. We've built a world where the default mode of work is completely incompatible with raising children, and then we patch it with policies that let you temporarily escape that default.
The timing of this question matters. Birth rates are falling basically everywhere in the developed world. Remote work has scrambled the boundary between home and office in ways we're still sorting through. The mismatch between what human biology expects and what modern life demands is getting harder to ignore.
It's also worth naming that this isn't just a policy puzzle. There's a deep evolutionary story here. For something like 99% of human history, children weren't raised by one or two isolated parents. They were raised in groups, extended families, whole bands of hunter-gatherers, multi-generational households where care was distributed across many adults. The nuclear family plus daycare plus a few weeks of leave is the historical blip, not the norm.
The question isn't really which country has the best leave policy. It's whether the whole framework, work over here, children over there, and a brief bridge between them, makes any sense at all.
Which is where we should probably start. Because to answer that, we've got to go back to before the 9-to-5 even existed and look at how humans actually did this for most of our time on Earth.
Let's step back and ask, what is parental leave really for? And what was there before it?
Let's define the puzzle here, because the spread in policies isn't just trivia, it's revealing something. Estonia gives mothers 100 weeks. That's nearly 2 years. Fathers get 30 weeks. Japan matches at 52 weeks for each parent, but the uptake tells a different story. Only about 7% of fathers take more than 2 weeks. The policy exists on paper, but the culture hasn't bought in.
Then there's the United States, which is the only OECD country with no federal paid leave at all. 0 weeks guaranteed. So you've got this wild range, from nothing to nearly 2 years, and yet even the most generous version still frames care as something you need permission to do.
That's the thing. The leave itself, no matter how long, is built on the assumption that your real obligation is somewhere else. The workplace is the center, and parenting is the interruption. You get a sanctioned pause, and then you're expected back.
Which is a very strange way to organize a species that takes longer to reach any kind of independence than almost any other animal. A human infant is helpless for years, and we've designed a system where the people responsible for that infant are supposed to be back at their desks in weeks or months.
I think about this as a pediatrician. The biological reality of human infancy, the duration of breastfeeding, the attachment window, the sleep patterns, none of it lines up with the 12-week leave policy. We've known this for decades. And yet the policy debate is always about tweaking the length of the leave, not questioning the structure that makes leave necessary in the first place.
The deeper question isn't how much leave should we have. It's whether the whole concept of leave is a symptom. We built a work structure that's incompatible with human biology, and then we invented a temporary exemption from it and called it progress.
To see how strange this really is, you have to look at what came before. For 99% of human existence, there was no such thing as parental leave, not because societies were cruel, but because nobody needed it. Work and childcare weren't separate categories you had to negotiate between.
The 9-to-5 plus daycare plus a few weeks off is the anomaly. It's a tiny sliver of human history. We've normalized something that, in evolutionary terms, is basically an experiment.
That's the arc we should trace. What did care actually look like before the factory whistle started blowing? To answer that, we need to go back way before the 9-to-5 existed. And the place to start is with hunter-gatherer societies, because for something like 95% of anatomically modern human history, that's how we lived. Small bands, mobile, foraging. And the child-rearing model was radically different. The term is alloparenting. Allo meaning other. Care by people who aren't the biological parents. And it wasn't occasional babysitting, it was the default. The anthropologist Sarah Hardy has documented this extensively. Kumsan in the Kalahari, infants are held by someone about 70% of the time, but only 40% of that holding is by the mother.
So the majority of physical contact is with someone else.
Fathers, grandmothers, aunts, older siblings, unrelated band members. The infant is passed around constantly, and this isn't neglect, it's the opposite. The baby's attachment system evolved to expect multiple caregivers. The mother is central, but she's not isolated. She's not doing 3A feedings alone in a dark room while her partner sleeps because he has work in the morning.
That image alone, the isolated mother at 3A, is basically a modern invention. For most of human history, she'd have been surrounded by other women, older children, her own mother probably within arm's reach.
That distributed load changes everything. No single adult is ever on 24/7. The physiological stress of constant vigilance, which we now call postpartum anxiety or parental burnout, that's partly a product of doing something alone that we evolved to do in groups.
The nuclear family with two exhausted parents and a baby monitor is not just different from the ancestral model. It's almost the inverse of it.
Here's what's striking. Kumsan aren't some obscure exception. This pattern shows up across hunter-gatherer societies, the Akha in Central Africa, the Ife, the Akta in the Philippines. Among the Akha, fathers hold infants about 22% of the time, which is more than fathers in any modern society we've measured. Care is just woven into the fabric of daily life. You don't schedule it.
Because there's no separation between the work sphere and the care sphere. You're foraging with the baby on your hip. You're processing food while older children entertain the toddler. The activities are integrated.
Then agriculture arrives. About 10,000 years ago, people settle down. Extended families co-reside. Grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, all within earshot. And here's the key thing. Childcare is still integrated into daily work. Children are in the fields. Grandmothers are watching toddlers while mothers thresh grain. The work of subsistence and the work of care are the same activity, happening in the same place.
There's still no such thing as leave, because nobody's leaving anything. You're not stepping away from a job to go be with your child. The child is there. The child has always been there.
And this model persists through most of agricultural history. The pre-industrial household was a production unit. Children learned by watching and helping. Care was distributed across the household. Nobody was clocking in and clocking out.
Then the factory whistle blows.
The Industrial Revolution is the rupture. The 9-to-5 workday is a 19th century invention. Henry Ford didn't popularize the 40-hour week until 1926. Before that, factory hours were even worse, 12, 14 hours. But the real shift wasn't the hours. It was the physical separation. Work moved out of the home and into the factory, and for the first time in human history, the place where adults spent their days was a place children could not be.
That's where the 1833 Factory Act comes in.
The 1833 Factory Act in the UK limited child labor, which was a good and necessary thing. Children were being worked to death. But it also cemented a new idea. Children belong in schools, adults belong in factories. The two worlds are legally separated, and suddenly care becomes a problem that has to be solved. Who's watching the children while the adults are at the mill?
The answer for a long time was the wife. The male breadwinner model wasn't an accident. The 9-to-5 was designed for a worker who had zero caregiving responsibilities, because someone else, a woman, unpaid, was handling all of that at home.
That's the architecture we're still living in. The factory floor became the office cubicle. The expectation that the worker is unencumbered, no children, no elder care, no domestic responsibilities, that got baked into the structure. Parental leave is the patch we apply when reality intrudes.
When a new parent gets 12 weeks off, what they're really getting is a brief exemption from a system that was never designed for them to be a parent in the first place.
12 weeks, or in the U, often 0 weeks federally, and then the assumption is that you'll hand the infant to someone else. Daycare, a nanny, a grandparent if you're lucky. The system assumes a backup, and if you don't have one, the whole thing collapses.
That backup, historically, was the mother staying home, which is why leave policies were originally maternity leave only. Paternity leave is a much later addition, and in most countries it's still a fraction of what mothers get. The underlying assumption is that care is women's work, and the real worker is male.
You can see the trade-offs in the data. Short leave. 6 weeks, 8 weeks, strains maternal mental health, disrupts breastfeeding, and can affect the attachment process in ways we've measured. But very long leave, 3 years or more out of the workforce, that can crater women's career progression, lifetime earnings, pension contributions. Neither end of the spectrum actually solves the underlying separation.
Even Sweden's 480 days, which sounds impossibly generous to American ears, is still a leave. You're still stepping away from something that, by design, doesn't accommodate the child. The structure itself hasn't changed. You just get a longer pass.
That brings us to the uncomfortable core of this. Parental leave, no matter how generous, is a concession. It says, we acknowledge that the default arrangement is incompatible with raising children. Here's some time off from the incompatibility. Then come back. It's not a redesign, it's a tolerance. That concession has a knock-on effect that's worth pulling apart. By giving leave only to parents, we're reinforcing the idea that care is a private problem. It's your baby, your leave, your burden. The nuclear family as the sole care unit. That's not just an assumption the system makes. It's an assumption the system actively builds into law.
The policy says, here's time off for you, the parent, and implicitly says, the rest of you, neighbors, community, extended family, this isn't your concern. It atomizes care. Whereas in the alloparenting model, care was communal by default. Nobody asked whose kid is this. The question didn't make sense.
You can see modern experiments trying to claw that back. Denmark has co-housing communities. Satadamen is the famous one, founded in the 1970s, where families share common spaces and childcare duties are distributed across households. It's not a commune exactly. Each family has its own home, but the kids move between them and the adults share the load.
I've seen versions of this. The French creche system is interesting because it's not just daycare. It's state-funded, community-based care starting from 3 months, with trained staff and a pedagogical framework. It's not a last resort. It's treated as a public good, like a library.
Finland takes a different approach with their home care allowance. If a parent or grandparent stays home with a child under 3, the state pays them. It's not leave from a job. It's recognizing that the care itself is work worth funding, regardless of who does it. A grandmother can be the recipient.
Which is actually closer to the ancestral model than any leave policy. You're not stepping away from a factory. You're being supported to do care in a network. The money follows the care, not the employment status.
These are niche. Co-housing, crèches, grandparent stipends, they exist, but they're not the default. The default is still two parents, a nuclear household, and some form of leave that eventually runs out. And when it runs out, You're back in a 9-to-5 that expects you to compartmentalize. Nobody wants to hear about your baby at the 11A.
That's where the push for longer leave starts to look like a trap. Canada offers up to 12 months now. Japan offers 52 weeks. Those are real improvements over 6 weeks. But the parent still returns to a structure that was never designed for them to be a parent. The leave ends. The structure doesn't budge.
Japan is the case study that really brings this home. 52 weeks available for fathers, one of the most generous paternity policies in the world on paper, and only about 7% of fathers take more than 2 weeks. The law says you can. The culture says you shouldn't. Your boss took 2 days when his kid was born. What are you going to do, take a year?
Policy alone doesn't shift the underlying norms. You need the structure of work to change, not just the length of the break from it. Shorter hours, genuine flexibility, on-site childcare that isn't a converted closet. Things that integrate care into the workday rather than cordoning it off.
Which brings us to the uncomfortable part of Daniel's question, the capitalism critique. Parental leave is a mild concession because the system needs workers to reproduce. Literally, the workforce has to be replenished, but it doesn't want to pay the full cost of raising those future workers. So you get just enough leave to keep birth rates from collapsing entirely, but not enough to actually support healthy child development in the way our biology expects.
The system is optimized for GDP, not for human flourishing. That's not a slogan. It's a design choice. And you can measure it. The countries with the most generous leave policies are also the ones watching their birth rates fall below replacement. The leave is generous enough to be called generous, but it's not integrated enough to make parenting feel sustainable.
If you took the alloparenting model seriously, not as a romantic idea about hunter-gatherers, but as a design principle, you'd fund care as infrastructure. Community-based, multi-adult, flexible. You'd normalize paternity leave not as helping mom, but as spreading the load across more shoulders, the way it was spread for most of human history. You'd make it weird for a workplace not to have children visible somewhere.
The sloth perspective here is actually instructive.
I was wondering when you'd get there.
Sloth mothers carry their young for months, up to 6 months in some species, and the infant clings to the mother while she moves through the canopy. But here's the thing. Sloths are solitary. The mother does it alone. And it works for sloths because the infant's development is slow and the mother's metabolism matches that pace. But humans aren't solitary. We're a cooperative breeding species. When we try to parent like sloths, alone, in isolation, one adult carrying the full weight, we break. The biology doesn't support it.
Actually grounded in zoology. I'm almost disappointed. I expected you to claim sloths invented daycare.
Daycare is a human compromise. Sloths would never. Too much social interaction.
Your point stands. The mismatch is between a cooperative breeding species and an economic structure that isolates the breeding pair. Parental leave patches the isolation. It doesn't end it.
What do we actually do with this? Because it's easy to sit here and say the system is broken. Harder to figure out what a person, a parent, someone about to be a parent, actually does on Monday morning.
The first thing is to stop treating the nuclear family as the default unit of care. Build your village. I know that sounds like a Pinterest quote, but the anthropology backs it up. For most of human history, you didn't have to build the village. It was already there. Now you do have to build it because the physical architecture of modern life doesn't hand it to you.
That means looking at your actual life and asking, who are the alloparents? Which friends, neighbors, co-workers, family members can hold the baby for an hour while you shower or nap? And then actually asking them. Kom-san mother isn't doing it alone at 3A because she doesn't have to. We've made it culturally strange to ask for help, but the biology expects it.
The data from the alloparenting research shows that maternal stress drops measurably when care is distributed. Cortisol levels, self-reported anxiety, the whole picture. This isn't a nice to have. For a cooperative breeding species, social support is as real a need as calories.
On the policy side, the goal isn't just more leave. It's restructuring work so care can exist inside it. 4-day work weeks, flexible hours, on-site childcare that's actually good, not a converted conference room with a few toys. The French creche system shows this is possible at scale. It's not theoretical.
Push for paternity leave parity. Not because it's fair, though it is, but because it normalizes shared care. When fathers take real leave, the cultural signal is that care isn't women's work, it's just work. Japan's 7% uptake on a 52-week policy tells you that the law alone doesn't shift norms. The workplace has to expect men to take it.
At the family level, question the assumption that daycare is the only option. Shared nannies, grandparent stipends like Finland's model, job-sharing arrangements. These aren't just cost-saving hacks. They're ways of distributing care across more adults, which is what the infant's attachment system evolved for.
If you're in a position to do it, support co-housing or childcare cooperatives locally. These things sound fringe, but they're just modern versions of the extended family compound. Satadaman in Denmark has been running for over 50 years. The kids turn out fine. Better than fine, in some measures.
The through line in all of this is, don't parent alone. Not because it's hard, though it is, but because we weren't built for it. The isolated nuclear family is the experiment. The village is the control group.
Maybe the biggest question is still ahead of us. If we redesign society from scratch, knowing what we know about human biology, about attachment, about what actually reduces parental stress, would we invent the 9-to-5 and parental leave? Or would we build something entirely different?
I don't think we'd invent either. The 9-to-5 was a solution to a specific problem, coordinating factory shifts. It was never about human flourishing. And parental leave is just the apology for it.
Here's what makes this moment interesting. We're in this strange window where AI and remote work are scrambling the old assumptions. The physical separation between work and home, the thing the Industrial Revolution created, is dissolving for a lot of people, but enough that the old factory model is losing its grip.
The question is whether we use that opening to actually redesign things, or whether we just port the 9-to-5 into a Zoom window and call it progress.
Remote work that still expects you at your desk from 9-to-5, camera on, no children audible. That's not a redesign. That's the factory floor with better Wi-Fi.
The opportunity is real, though. If work is no longer tied to a physical place, then care doesn't have to be exiled from it. You could imagine workspaces with children present, schedules built around developmental needs, not shift changes. The creche and the office in the same building, with parents drifting between them.
Or we could double down, require everyone back in the office, keep the leave policies exactly as they are, and pretend the mismatch isn't there. That's the path of least resistance. It's also the path that keeps birth rates falling and parental burnout climbing.
The choice is basically, do we build something that matches our biology, or do we keep apologizing for the mismatch with longer and longer leaves?
That's the open question, and I don't think we know the answer yet.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The pigment known as mummy brown was made from ground-up Egyptian mummies and was popular among European painters from the 16th through 19th centuries until its grisly origin became widely known and it fell out of favor.
Poro, this has been My Weird Props, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want to send us a question like Daniel did, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.